What's going on? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and on the phone line from the nationally syndicated Ace and TJ Morning Show, Ace is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, man?
Hey, man, how are you doing? Thank you for that great introduction. Much more than necessary.
Now, Ace, I am a guy where when I stub my toe, I think the world is coming to an end. This past year, you have gone through so many ups, like marrying your wife, and so many downs, like the loss of your daughter. How are you doing it? Because I sincerely look up to you with how you've dealt with your adversity.
You know, it's just been kind of it's one of those times. I think one of the things that's benefited me well is that I have the ability to kind of compartmentalize things.
Yeah.
And also because of the fact the way we do a radio show, you know, we've shared all of our lives. So the support that I got from people that listen to our show, our radio family that we call them, from the show themselves, from the people that listen, was just overwhelming. And it was certainly a definite pick-me-up. So my daughter died in July in a car crash. She was 21. She turned 21 like 3 weeks before. And she had literally grown up on the radio. Like I was having this crazy story. I was having lunch with the band Bare Naked Ladies. So she's grown up on the radio. People have lived through everything that she's experienced in her life through our radio show. So that definitely made it a little bit easier because I was able to share openly and honestly with everybody and everything we were experiencing. And then of course we're already in a weird time with the pandemic that was in full swing at that point, as it continues to be today. And then, you know, fast forward a few months later, just got married again, 6 weeks ago. And so it's really been a crazy time, but the support from the listeners has been huge and it's been a massive help. It makes it a much easier transition, I think.
So you work in a different format. So your top 40 hot ACs, so your listeners tend to be a lot nicer at times. I work in hot talk radio, which is rock and roll radio, essentially. Most of our listeners are nice, but let's just say if you were in my format, I feel like you would get a few haters who would say, oh, deal with it, you wussy. Did you, by any chance, have any of that? Because from what I saw, it seemed like everybody was cool to you. And I'm not saying anybody would ever be like that to you, but it just seems like with the way that you've built this radio show of such nice people and such a family environment where when you're listening to Ace and TJ, you feel like you're listening to family. I feel like you were able to avoid trolls.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to a great extent, yes. The only thing like that I saw was only because I one day kind of stumbled upon it looking at news reports of my daughter's death. And what I found interesting was my daughter was speeding at the time of the accident. It happened about midnight. And it just so happened, I got to give you a little backstory here so you understand the context of this. It just so happened that 3 weeks before, she was going to meet me and my fiance then, now my wife, for dinner. And while sitting at a stop sign, she was rear-ended. And her car was a 2010 BMW. So her car was 10 years old. We had bought it used. It wasn't the greatest car in the world, but she loved that car that I bought it for when she turned 18, 19, right after she turned 18. And so when her car was hit, the rental car they gave her was a 2020 BMW. So when in the news reports, people said she was driving a 2020 BMW, she was speeding on a road that she was within a mile of her mom's house, going from a friend to her mom's, and she had this accident. And all the news reports were like, she was driving a 2020 BMW at a high rate of speed. And the only thing that I saw were people commenting like, oh, little rich girl in a 2020 BMW speeding. It's her own fault. That kind of thing. Not directed at me, but just a comment. Now, what the interesting part was, people just jumped in like, are you kidding me? You know, you're such an evil person and all this kind of stuff. People came to our defense right away. That's a mindset that I don't understand. And people don't know that the car was a rental. It's just terrible. That's the only thing like that I experienced. You're right. I'm very blessed that our listeners, the way our show is built, very much in a family type sense. I mean, obviously, we make some people mad with jokes and stuff all the time, as anybody would these days. But no, I didn't experience a lot of the trolls, people just setting out to be mean. It was 99.9% overwhelmingly positive and very supportive and unbelievable.
Was it overwhelming at times, though, how great the response was? Because when my dad died 7 years ago, I probably got 1,000 messages on my Facebook post. And at that time, I didn't know as many people because I was only 21. But I remember I got maybe 20 text messages during the whole overnight while I was sleeping. And it kind of creeped me out. I don't know what it was, but it's hard to explain. Did you feel that at all, or were you grateful? Because I haven't gone through a death since then, but I just remember when I lost my dad, it was hard for me to comprehend. And all the social media, everyone's like, oh, thoughts and prayers. It kind of made me feel very overwhelmed. I don't know if you went through that.
Yeah, I felt overwhelmed in a really positive way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
From the standpoint of, I had experienced something like that before. My dad also died. My dad died 9 years ago, last month. And so I had experienced some of that then, not nearly as much as this, because, you know, 9 years ago, social media was a very different beast than it is today. But no, it was overwhelming from the standpoint of, oh my God, like, I don't know what to do. I still haven't responded to everybody on social media. There were thousands of messages on my Instagram. There were thousands of messages on Facebook. Cards came. I don't know how people got my address. You know, I don't really keep it a secret, but I'm obviously not out there throwing my address out there. And it's like, how do these people get my address? But they were mailing me cards, and it was overwhelming from the standpoint of, like, wow, I feel very indebted to them for taking the time and the effort to reach out to me just to be kind. And it's a very overwhelming thing.
That's very unique to think about, the fact that you got something in the mail, because I feel like if that were to happen here in Florida, I feel like us getting something in the mail would just be a little bit more awkward. You know what I mean? I think it's just different parts of America have different types of intentions, if that makes sense, because North Carolina is one of the most genuine places I've ever been to. I have family that's, well, my uncle died in Greensboro, but like my mom's side of the family is in Greensboro. So like getting something in the mail from a listener is not as weird in North Carolina as it would be in Florida and Chicago. You know what I mean? Like North Carolina,
no, I completely understand.
It has its flaws, but it's very down to earth.
Yeah, I got mail from we're heard, you know, kind of a regional thing, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama. I grew up in Louisiana. We're on a station in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, where we do very well, and in Kentucky, where we do very well. So it's like, you know, we got messages from all these places. But a quick story of our former boss, the guy that we used to work with in Huntsville, Alabama, texted me, and then he sent me a card, and I saw that it was there, and I had a stack of cards on my desk that I had not opened. And I actually been keeping them in a box. There were a couple hundred of them in a box that I just, like, one day I'm going to sit down and go through these. And I just had been remiss to do it because sometimes it was emotionally overwhelming. He texted me one day. He said, hey, just wanted to make sure you got my card. It had a check in it for your charity. And I said, Bill, I saw it. I haven't opened it yet. I just haven't got to it. Let me go do that right now. When I opened it up, there was a check in there from him for $5,000 to our charity in my daughter's honor. So I then thought, maybe I should open all of these and sit down quickly. And as I'm opening cards, there was money in some of them. And it never occurred to me people would send me checks for our charity. One of them had a check in it for $21,000 from a lady to our charity in honor of my daughter. She makes a donation every year on her brother's birthday to someone in honor. And apparently she's very wealthy because every year she donates $21,000 because that's how old her brother was when he died, the same age my daughter was. And there was over $30,000 sitting in cards that was on a box on the floor of my office in my house, all because I just was like, I can't bring myself to go through these cards right now. And it never occurred to me that people would do that. And they did. Yeah. People have been unbelievably kind to me with all that we've been through in the past, you know, 6-8 months.
So how have you changed as a person since this has happened as a father, as a new husband, as a radio host? I know that's a very obvious thing to ask, but how have you changed overall as a man?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I don't know that I have that much, with the exception of my podcast. We completely overhauled that. As a person, as a man, I don't know that it's changed me a tremendous amount. It's obviously made me a little bit more grateful and for the time that I have with people. Not, but I was already. I already learned to appreciate that, mainly because of my parents and my dad passing away, you know, years ago. I've always been very grateful. I've always believed in helping people and being involved in other people's lives. And the biggest change in my life has been overhauling my podcast and making it so it's here for people who are looking for help now. It's called Ace at Large. We kept the same name but totally changed the format of it to make it something to offer people some help, some assistance, some something to think about if you're going through a difficult time. So whether you're like me and going through grief, or whether you are dealing with, you know, an anxiety, a depression, especially in light of the pandemic and all that kind of stuff, we've tried to take that and make it something that's helpful to people. Because I was talking to our manager one day and I said, hey, man, what do you think people do that don't have all of the support that I have? I've got a great then fiance, now wife, who's been phenomenal through all this. My son's been a rock star through the whole thing. He's 18. He turned 18 right after his sister died. I've got groups of friends that I grew up with that I've known 47, 48 years. I've got the guys in my band who are incredible, the people on the show, and all these listeners. I was like, what if somebody doesn't have this type of infrastructure? What do they do? And he said, well, that's what it was, his suggestion. He goes, that's what your podcast should be now for those people. So that's been the biggest change, is trying to take that and make it something that is beneficial to people who don't have the support staff that I have had, been fortunate enough to have, with whatever it is that they're experiencing and going through. But as a person, I don't know that it's changed me a tremendous amount, other than making me more grateful and more aware of people around me and the time that I spend with them.
I think that's very cool of you that on your podcast, you're sort of speaking for other people and trying to help them out, because I feel like a lot of times radio hosts sort of take everything for granted and then they become very unrelatable. So I really like the fact that you changed of your podcast to do that.
Yeah, thanks. It's a situation where I point out to everybody every time, look, I'm not a therapist, but I've been through a lot of therapy. You know, I got divorced 4 or 5 years ago, went through a really, you know, down period. Spent a couple years just kind of hiding the fact that my wife and I, my ex-wife and I, were separated at the time. You know, then I, right after I got divorced, a few months after I was officially divorced, and all, I bet my now wife, and who's much younger than I am, has brought a lot of joy and a lot of energy into my life that was much needed, because I was at a pretty low point. And then obviously my daughter died and that kind of stuff. So I've been kind of on an emotional roller coaster through the past few years. And I just wanted to do something, because what I did was, Hoppy, and I guess I should have mentioned this earlier, when I gave my daughter's eulogy at her funeral, the thing I pointed out to everybody was, now, whether you're her friends, whether you're her family, now we all have to pick up the mantle. She was a big personality. She entered a room and picked everybody up and made everybody laugh. And she was, you know, that type of person. So now we have to work a little bit harder. And my closing statement to everybody was, we've got to, you know, hug a little bit tighter and open our hearts with a little bit more love and work a little bit harder to help other people, because that's what she would have done. And now she's not here to do that. So we have to do our part and a little bit of hers to make sure that this was for nothing, because I can't believe that this would happen to her and it all be for nothing. So I'm just kind of on a mission to make sure that it's not for nothing, so to speak.
Have you had any moments, maybe when you're sleeping or just anything overall, maybe you're jogging, maybe you're watching TV, where all of a sudden you feel like she's there, or you feel like a moment where she's in your mind, if that makes sense?
Well, I think about her all the time. I mean, that's she's always in my mind, I guess, to say. But no, I haven't had that experience. Here are the interesting types of things that happen. I moved right after she died. I was living uptown in Charlotte, and I moved to the suburbs where my son has moved, much closer to him, because to be there where I could see him every day at all, even though he's a senior in high school. And I just wanted to be closer to him as a person, you know, even though I see him all the time, virtually almost every day, I just wanted to be closer to him. And in the process, we moved some furniture. My daughter's name was Peyton. We moved some furniture that had been in storage into Peyton's room. And our dog loved Peyton because they became very close when she lived with me and Amanda for, you know, about 9 months. We all lived together for a while before I moved to uptown Charlotte. And the dog would go in, and still does. Sometimes we'll go in and just sit in that room and stare. Or you'll see the dog get up and walk upstairs in that room when you walk in. The dog is just kind of standing in the room looking around. Weird. And I try not to read too much into that kind of stuff. But it's just a strange feeling you get. Like, it's as if the dog senses something about the furniture or can tell. It's a basset hound. So I don't know. And I don't want to say that the dog senses anything, but maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But it's just, it's odd to watch. And it just makes me feel kind of like, is there something to that or not? You know what I mean? But I haven't had anything like that. I just, mainly it's because I think a lot of that for me is because she's always in the forefront of my mind all the time. And so it's not like I get caught off guard by anything.
That's a unique thing to think about, because I know you're very religious and you believe in God, and I'm not sure what I believe in, but there's definitely moments where I feel like it's not just that things happen for a reason, but there's always like a silver lining at the end of every day that I have. And I've noticed it lately. I go, okay, well, that happened for a reason. And I'm beginning to notice it more, because I used to kind of pretend like I didn't think it was there, if that makes sense. But now I try So like, for example, it's really random. Whenever I'm having like a panic attack or I'm nervous, this rap song I like called Everything's Gonna Be Okay by Father MC from the 90s will play on my Spotify every time. And it's usually when I'm like deep in thought. And there's just little weird things like that happen. It's the most weird thing.
Yeah, I've had things like that. I've experienced different things like that throughout my life. And I was having a conversation with somebody one day about religion, someone who wasn't religious. And they said, you know, how would you convince me? And I said, well, it's not for me to convince you. I said, I don't have the words to express to you what I feel with situations that have occurred, that have happened to me. And I can give you a little note. When I gave the eulogy at my daughter's funeral, before her funeral, the morning of the funeral, I went into the funeral home early before anybody else got there. Because I wanted, it's going to be difficult to share the story, it always is, because I wanted to share a few minutes, just me and her, you know, because it was my last time to get to do that. And so I got to the end of my time there with her. I realized, okay, I've got to get up and go. And she had a very funny sense of humor. And we always talked about, you know, doing good things and being a good speaker. She was a great public speaker, really good. And I told her at the end, I said, okay, it sounds weird to say I'm sitting in a room alone at a funeral home with my daughter who's in a casket because she's died. It's going to sound very strange, but I'm sitting there literally talking out loud to her, helping myself do it. And I laughed and I cried. And I was there for about 20 minutes. And at the end, I said to her, I said, last thing. I said, I've tried to rehearse this eulogy several times, and I can't get through it without crying. I said, so, now remember, I'm speaking to my daughter who's, you know, his dad is in the casket. I said, so just know I got good material here. I need you to help me get through this. I said, the material's A plus. If you help me pull this off, we're going to burn this bitch down today and make everybody feel better. And I started laughing because I knew that would have made her laugh. And when I got up to give the eulogy, my son got up surprisingly and spoke right before me. And when I went up to speak and looked out at everybody, it was the most peaceful, calming feeling that I've ever had. And I don't get rattled speaking in public. The bigger the crowd, the better. I love it. But I've never felt that at peace with what was about to happen, knowing it was going to be a very emotional 20 minutes that I was about to speak. And that's one of those things that to me is a little, you know, that's a little hand of God kind of moment that reminds me, hey, you know, this is, in a rather unorthodox way. You know, you're not alone in this journey. Somebody's here to help you along the way. And I've had quite a few. I've probably had four moments like that in my life that were very unusual and gave me such a sense of peace in a moment of crisis that it's just confirmed and firmed, so to speak, my belief. Thing is, though, I'm still a screw up. I do the best I can.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm not really religious, but I'm not really against it. But what I don't like, so I believe in like the law of attraction, and like you can pretty much manifest mostly what you want. So like, I now live in this new apartment with my girlfriend, and right when we walked in, I told her that this was going to be our apartment, and now it is. So I was correct about that. But what I hate about when I talk about like the law of attraction or manifest, or you can do pretty much what you want, is everybody, like some people at work or listeners, think like, oh, so you're saying that you can go into a basketball court and become the next LeBron James? And I go, no, not at all. I go, there's a lot of things you can't do. But if you truly set goals that are reasonable and you put your mind to it, anything is possible. And for people that are like very against religion or very against like meditation or the law of attraction, what I've learned, Ace, is you really can't convert them, because then you're just going to be irritating to them. Like, you got to let them want to find it. Because I know maybe three or four people, who would benefit so much from the law of attraction, but because they're so against it, I go, why am I going to even waste my energy if you're just going to think it's hogwash?
Yeah, well, here's the thing that I've always, the way I look at that is, has the guy screaming in his megaphone on the street corner that everybody's going to hell and should repent, has he ever successfully brought anybody over to his side? Odds are no.
No.
Odds are he never has. And I hate that. My preacher is another person. He's like, dude, this guy's killing me. Like, this guy makes my job 10 times harder, because that's the representation that people have. I agree with you on many fronts of that. Number one, everybody's born with something different that they're talented at. Look, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, born to be basketball players. Their athletic skill set allowed them the opportunity to do virtually anything they wanted to athletically. They chose basketball. I was born to do what it is that I do. I learned early on, hey, this is a skill set that I have. How can I use it as best I can? We all have free will. There are a lot of people that have incredible skills that never choose to work on them. And because of that, they never become anything, or at least they never become what they wanted to become because of a lack of work ethic. The way I look at it is this, and let's use my daughter as an example and her death. Several people have asked me, are you mad at God because your daughter died? And I pointed out, no, I've never had that moment like, God, why did you let this happen? I know why it happened. It happened because my daughter made a couple of bad choices. In a thunderstorm, driving way too fast on a road that was close to her house. I mean, driving way too fast. In a very bad rainstorm, car hydroplane slid up over a curb and hit a tree. It hit a tree just right. Was it kind of a freak thing? Yeah. However, the decisions that she made are what caused this. She had the opportunity. She could have been going slower. She could have stayed where she was. She could have not. She could have realized, hey, it's raining. I need to slow down and be a little more careful. But those were bad decisions that she made. So I'm not mad at God. It was, you know, God gives us all free will. So these were decisions that she made, and it just so happened in this case, it didn't work out. So my job is to now, you know, pick it up and you know, spread a little bit of goodness into the world and try to help some other people, since she's not here to do it herself. You know what I mean?
Is there a part of you that feels like you have to sort of protect her because she was going so fast? Like, did you get any comments from people that were kind of like, I know you were saying online that there were some comments of people that were talking about, oh, she's a rich girl in a new car. But is there a part of you that feels like you're sort of having to protect her a little bit because it was sort of her fault, even though she shouldn't have been going fast and nobody wanted her to die, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But no, I really haven't dealt with that. I think the overwhelming majority of people realize, no matter what, it's still a loss for me. And I think one of the things that I pointed out on the radio to people was, hey, look, this was her fault. She was going too fast in a car she wasn't familiar with, and in a terrible storm, in a really bad rainstorm. So this is all on her, you know. And as hard as that is to say, those are the facts. And so I've always treated it that way, and I've been very open and honest about that. And I think, you know, people have been really super cool about it. And I think they understand that no matter the reason, no matter why or how it happened, it's still an incredible loss, because everybody knows she was as my wife puts it, she was your partner in crime. You know, she would be on the radio with us all the time. We had a very similar sense of humor. She would be on my podcast from time to time. And everybody knew that we were super close, had a very tight bond. And as she would tell everybody, you know, David is my real name. She was like, David's my dude. And that's my first call for everything. And no matter what, she had a car accident when she was rear-ended by the lady in the car. She called me and I said, okay, well, you've already called 911. No, Dad, I called you first. No, then hang up the phone, call 911. I'll be there in a minute. It'll be fine. So people understand that the loss, no matter the reason, for me, is still an incredible loss. And for our family, for her mom, for her brother, for Amanda, my wife, you know, so all of that, they've been overwhelmingly cool. I haven't had any blowback really at all from that.
What's funny is I just think people don't know how nice North Carolina is, because here in Florida, and I keep saying this, talking down Florida as if it's a bad place, but I just often forget that, like, when you're in North Carolina, everybody pretty much has each other's back. You know what I mean? Like, there's the nice parts of the Midwest where people can be nice. There's nice parts of Florida where people can be nice. But there's something about that community in North Carolina, man. And I've seen it single. I've seen it right up in person with my aunts and uncles. Like, it's a bond that I can't even put into words. And I'm not even sure how to finish this sentence of what I'm saying, because it's that real. Like, there's something about the way they cook dinner in North Carolina, the way they have wakes in North Carolina, the way you watch sports games. There is just this. And I haven't noticed it as much in Tennessee, but like North Carolina, dude, like that is like a legit place.
Yeah, I do think a lot of it is. I know. I understand exactly what you're saying, and it is hard to describe. I think a lot of it is that traditional Southern hospitality, from the standpoint of we had a girl that worked for us one time, and she moved down from Manhattan, and she had worked for Howard for a while. And then after that, she moved down to work with us. And she was like, she bought this condo in South Charlotte. It's just the first day. She was like, I don't know if I'm going to like it over there. Born and raised in Manhattan. She was like, I don't like it. The people are knocking on my door, introducing themselves. You know, somebody brought me a pie yesterday. Like, I don't need the hassle of all these people. And after like 2 weeks, she goes, let me go back on that. I love it. You see people outside. They're friendly. They talk to you. Hey, how are you? What's going on? Her other neighbor made too much dinner one night and brought her a plate of food. Like, hey, you don't have time to keep the plate. I'll get back to it. She was like, I've never experienced that. It's unbelievable. People are so nice. It is that, so for in a large part, that traditional Southern hospitality type of thing. That I think makes it really, really cool.
Yeah, man, that's definitely exactly what I'm thinking about, because like I remember I used to hang out with my Nana. She's been dead for about 14, 15 years now. And when I would have her come to my house, because I was in Illinois, and whenever she met my friends or my mom's side of the family or even my dad's side of the family, like people were so freaked out by her because she was a little manic all the time. But dude, she was so talkative and she was like the life of the party, and you would have thought she was like on like a lot of caffeine or something, but that was just her. There's just that Southern attitude where it makes you like the life of the party whenever you walk in. It's weird.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's 100% true. And I think it's one of the things that served us well on the radio is that we have brought that and always tried to bring that to the radio. And again, a lot of it is who your target audience is and how you reach them. I mean, obviously, if we did a male-dominated show, it would be very different than the type of show that we do now, which is honestly pretty much almost 50-50 male-female, but it's still more of a female appeal show. And we've tried to bring that. We refer to everybody as the radio family. We've tried to bring that type of thing to the radio where – even though we disagree and people get mad and, you know, they get upset at us for things that we say or jokes that we make or topics or whatever, they know that there's no ill intent by it. And so it's more easy to excuse it when people understand, hey, you didn't care for that one. We're just having fun, that kind of stuff. And so we've tried to bring that family style attitude to the radio while still having fun and being, cutting edge isn't necessarily the right word, but still doing some things that make people raise an eyebrow every now and then.
Now, for people that would want to check out your show and to check out your social media, where can they find everything you're up to, Ace?
Well, you can hear our show anytime on the Ace and TJ app. Just Ace ampersand TJ, or you can put in Ace and TJ, and it'll come up. You can download it free in your app store. We have our iHeartRadio channel, so on iHeartRadio, just search for Ace and TJ, and then our social media, Facebook, it's the Ace and TJ Show, and on Twitter and Instagram, it's at the Ace TJ Show.
Well, Ace, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show, man. I've known you for about 8 years now, and I'm proud to be your friend. And I admire you, man. Like I said in the beginning of the show, like, I don't know how you deal with it, because like, I'll literally sprain my toe and I literally think the world's coming to an end. And then I see how you do it, David. And I go, I don't know how David does it. Like, I look up to you, man, and you're very admirable.
Thank you very much. And I want to point out to people, just as much am enthused by watching what it is that you do and your work ethic and how hard you're working to make a career for yourself. And I find it to be very impressive. And it reminds me that I got to continue to work hard each and every day. So thank you for taking the time. I found this to be different than I expected, but a very interesting conversation. I always love talking to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, man, because I feel like in the past, I kind of just read from a piece of paper, which is pretty much what I did. Like, I would write out 20 things that I wanted to ask. And now I'm really working on whenever I interview somebody, or even if I'm like talking to my girlfriend or anybody ever, I just sort of take in the moment of what they're saying and then try to think about what I want to ask next and not always think about what I want to ask next, if that makes sense.
Well, I think it's great. It's working great for you. Thank you, man, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Ace.
Take care.
All right.